of the ways a congregation finds its direction is with the support of its ministers. Most of you know that this year the fellowship is in search of its next settled senior minister. And to be completely honest, it feels a little weird to talk about the ministerial transition. I'm not a minister. I don't play one on TV. I've only been a member here for 2 weeks and attending for just under 2 years. I've never been through a ministerial transition either as a minister or as a part of a congregation. The minister of my congregation in Salem, Massachusetts, the Reverend Jeff Barr Snell, has been at the First Church in Salem Unitarian Universalist since 1994, 2 years before I was born. Until I was in high school, I'm not sure I really knew there were other UU ministers in the area. I visited other churches like King's Chapel in Boston, but never on Sunday. There was even another UU church about 3 blocks down the street, which I didn't visit until my church went under construction. I was truly living in this bubble of my home congregation. For me, Unitarian Universalists were all Christians who never discussed spirituality, God, or religion outside of the weekly worship. And I'll admit that's a pretty bleak view of my past relationship with Unitarian Universalism. And it is most certainly not an accurate portrayal of UUs everywhere. But it does depict my Salem congregation as it was through the eyes of a young middle schooler. As a young adult, I've come to realize that the conversations were taking place, but not around me. It wasn't until high school when I met Reverend Hope Johnson and the now Reverend Tony Fisher, he hadn't finished seminary when I met him, that I began thinking about what Unitarian Universalism really is at its heart, in the pulsating heart of this living faith. Each minister in my life helps to teach me something new about Unitarian Universalism. Reverend Joanna Lubkin taught me you can have friends and sources of love but not know you do. Reverend Michael Slack taught me to experience worship as I wanted to experience it, standing, sitting, lying down, jumping, dancing. Reverend Leslie Mills taught me to look for friends in the most unlikely of places. And the Reverend Jeff Barr Snell taught me how sometimes the most important element of a minister's job is to look at what the congregation needs, which is often different from what the minister needs. I don't mean to leave out lay leaders and lay ministers who have taught me just as much, if not more. Carrie McDonald, the director of outreach at the UUA, and Bart Frost, the director of youth and young adult ministries at the Unitarian Universalist Association, taught me to question and criticize Unitarian Universalism without losing my faith. Transitioning between ministers, as this congregation is doing, is a jostle between exciting and frightening times. A new minister brings new beginnings. Recently, I've been thinking about what the new minister will bring to this community. And one of my biggest worries is about how the Lawrence Unitarian Universalist group will fare. How will this new minister help foster a relationship between the re-emerging campus group and the fellowship? While worries and uncertainties pervade my mind, I also know that through transition, we grow as individuals and as community. I hardly need to tell you that growth is essential to Unitarian Universalism. I once heard a UU joke that goes, "For a UU, tradition is something that was done last year. And a firmly established tradition is something that has been done for the past 2 years. If it has been done for the last 3 years, it's the way we've always done it." While theologically UUs grow and change more easily than many other faiths, growth and change in terms of practices and traditions can often be more difficult and slow-moving. I mean this neither positively nor negatively. The most important piece is having the knowledge and understanding that these struggles are real and present. Frank O. Holmes said, Life does not call us merely to do over and over again what we have already done. Nor does it call us to act out as puppets, parts already assigned to us. No, in the midst of a situation which is itself ever-changing, we are free to bring into realization new relationships of understanding and goodwill and new acts of courage. And I'll close with Margaret Williams Braxton's poem, Someday. Once upon a time, I was. Now, I am. Someday, I will become. Once there was, and now there is. Soon there will be, and someday there surely shall be. Once upon a time, we were, now we are, and someday, hallelujah, we shall surely become. Amen, amen.
Have you ever gotten lost? I mean, really, really lost. You know, it is a surprisingly easy thing to do. You're hiking along a trail, and the direction seems a little ambiguous, and you could go this way or that way, and you choose this way, and you wind up finding out it's really a deer path that leads you into sort of a nothing, so you retrace your steps, you try to find your way back. Nothing looks familiar. What started out as a warm hike on a beautiful sunny afternoon is now turning into a chilly slog as it gets darker and darker. You hope against hope that you can find your way back to the trail before dark descends. So it's easy to get lost if you don't have a navigational system, right? And that's why this was invented, the compass. You know, I took a class in Girl Scouts about how to navigate my way, and I was absolutely fascinated by the fact that no matter which way I held this, of course, the needle would always go where?
North,
right. True north. So, you know, this is the helpful navigational tool that if you know where you are and you know where you want to go, that a compass will help you get there. So I'm using this, of course, as a metaphor because the governing board this year has engaged in a process of exploring the fellowship's mission statement. The mission statement is really kind of our true north document. It doesn't say everything about the fellowship, but it's a way of explaining in a simple couple of words or a couple of sentences what are the enduring values of this congregation. So if you remember back in January, there was all those posters on the wall and sticky dots, and you were asked to reflect on those words and not vote, but sort of give your best effort in or your put the sticky dots on those pieces of paper that would indicate those are the things that you think were the most valuable about the fellowship. So it's our true north that we're trying to discern. So as I've also thought about the mission statement, it was created 5 years ago, and a lot has happened in 5 years. So that's part of the reason why you revisit it every 5 years. For those of you who have been around for 5 years or more, you know that you, for example, said goodbye to a beloved associate minister, Reverend Dottie Matthews, and you said hello to a beloved associate minister, Reverend Leah Hart Landsberg. Your senior minister during that time went on a sabbatical, and while he was on sabbatical, you built this beautiful sanctuary. He came back, and during that year of discernment, announced he would be leaving. So then you had another year of saying goodbye to Reverend Roger Birchhausen. And then last year, you were preparing to say hello to one senior interim minister that lived here, and instead you got two who were commuting from Cleveland, Ohio. And then you said goodbye to Reverend Wayne, and you said hello to me as the senior interim minister for this year. So that's a lot of change in a relatively short amount of time. The question is, what guides you through that, this time of transition. It is not, in fact, charismatic ministers. It's not great programs. It's not even the wonderful people that you love in this fellowship. It's your mission. What is your North Star? What, in other words, are you called to be and do in the world? That's what your governing board is discerning right now. And you know, we spend, as adults, we spend a lot of time on complicated words and sentences, fretting about adjectives, adverbs, commas, periods. However, in a stroke of brilliance, the governing board, and in particular board member Andy Smock, collaborated with our religious education director to ask the children of the fellowship to reflect on our current mission statement and on some of the value words that had arisen from the process that the board and you have engaged in back in January. So the children were presented with those value statements, and then they got to choose which one of those statements they would illustrate. And you just have to see some of these. You have to see the fellowship's values from the eyes of our children. And these are just a few of the rich artistic creations that were hung in the hallway earlier this year. Number one, welcome all. One of the values presented. I love this. A dinosaur or a T-Rex is welcoming a yellow, smiley-faced Waldo-type person. I don't know. Is this a picture of an adult before coffee? Or maybe it's a multi-generational encounter, you know, with a kid and a child and a dinosaur? I don't know. Anyway, it's a great piece of art. The second slide was reflecting on the word connection. And this came up as people were, again, thinking to describe, what is my true north about this particular place? So Emma writes, connecting to things in life and connecting to share feelings. That was what was important to her about this fellowship, connecting to things in life. This third one is compassion, RE equals religious education. And this drawing depicts another word that members of this community thought was important. These are words that kept coming up over and over again, and compassion was one of them. This one really struck me because I've never thought about compassion in the way that this young artist described it. This artist said, compassion is standing up for stuff that is scary. I never thought of it that way before, but when you are compassionate for another's plight, it leads you into action to take bold stands for justice, to stand up for stuff, even when it's scary. Slide four, courage. Courage is another word that kept arising from our work. This word leads us to social justice. And social justice, of course, is the third part of the mission, the current mission statement, to lead in social justice. But what's underneath that, I think, is courage, is what it takes to stand up and speak. And the next slide, I love this too. Courage. I can do this. I thought this was really important because, people have been, there's been a little bit of anxiety in the fellowship, like, well, what's next? What's going to happen next? We don't know. And I just thought this artist captured this perfectly. Standing before a body of water, a big ladder, just saying, I can do this. We can do this. And finally, this last one, courage, I think courage is stepping up, is what it says. And it looks like a person speaking in a microphone to a group of people. I think courage is stepping up. So although our children may not have been directly quoting the current mission statement, I can see all of them articulating some of the qualities that I think make for this fellowship's true original course, which is forging deep connections in, amongst, and beyond these walls. And as a result of those connections, compassion and wisdom is born and nurtured. And as a result of those connections, strengthened by compassion, this congregation takes bold and courageous stands for justice in the wider community. So regardless of how your governing board finally lands in presenting the mission statement in advance of the annual meeting in June, what is certain, what is obvious to me, is that the fellowship is deeply grounded in values that are so embedded in the DNA of this place that even our youngest children can express them. And I think that is really good news, because no matter where they roam, they're always going to know where their true north lies.
Did you happen to catch that last phrase of the translation on the previous screen? Can we go back one screen, please? Travel and never come back. Thank you. For a moment, you might have rethought our metaphor of travel, which had been up to this point pretty consistent. What began as a normal voyage with a beginning, middle, and end suddenly became open-ended, perhaps never-ending, and perhaps you sensed a bit of foreboding. For so many of us, home is our North Star, and every time we leave home, the route we take to find our way back is our true original course. It is that important to us. The thought of leaving home, never to return, is a daunting and often heartbreaking one. So home becomes this fixed thing in our heads. It's to there that our minds wander when we're not there. It's where we seek refuge after that long and painful day. It's where we hang our hat. And when we travel, perhaps for weeks or months or even years, home becomes a shining beacon. But my next point is this, and some of you probably know what I'm going to say already, that travel in any shape or form changes us profoundly and permanently. When we set off for sights unseen and take those scenes in, we are forced to reconsider our view of the world, and we make changes in that construct. And when we do come home, we find that home has changed too, changed because we are different. Home is in reality as fluid as we are as we travel through our lives. Now, last week, Kathleen and the stewardship committee presented us with a challenging idea. If you were not present for either of those services last Sunday, I urge you to go to our website and listen to that podcast. The challenging idea was this: the story we tell to ourselves and to each other about our fellowship has at its core the belief that we do well with what we have. During the service, we are asked to consider how that conceit is holding us back and how hanging on to that conceit puts our future in doubt. In my mind, it's hard to see this part of our story as our true and original course unless the story is to have a denouement of stasis or, worse still, decline. And I don't know about you, but I am not ready to start thinking about our ending. I have a very hard time seeing this fellowship anywhere near that stage, but we do need to change our story to avoid that premature denouement. I will now direct your attention to our curious signpost. I'm sure by now you've divined the meaning of its signs. We all have our wishes and dreams about what happens next as we consider our future together. Whether we are thinking about our next senior minister, or the mission of this fellowship, or the current stewardship drive, we dare to imagine what the future holds for us. And we have our opinions, too. Opinions about what that next step should look like. The fact of the matter is this. This is our home. And our home is subject to the same forces which rock our own lives. As we change, so changes our fellowship. Those Those forces are diverse and they're numerous, and none of us can control them all. We can only contribute, each of us, our own small effort by attending, by witnessing, by celebrating, by volunteering, by giving. And yet, combined, these small individual efforts make up the fellowship in its entirety. As if by magic, we all help in finding a new minister. All of us take part as we consider keeping or changing our mission statement. We all pitch in to create 100% of our operating budget. That's pretty impressive for so many small efforts. But as the Spidey saying goes, with all that power comes great responsibility. We cannot hide behind the notion that as these individual efforts appear to be so small, that perhaps ours won't be missed. But it will be. We all need to look deep inside ourselves to consider just what that connection between each of us and the fellowship is really worth to us. As it was pointed out last week, nobody saw the closing of the Harmony Cafe on College Avenue, but it happened. We assumed everything was okay, but it wasn't. Perhaps we should have been more aware, should have asked more questions, and then offered more of our assistance. And so, as we prepare to collect and accept the offering today, let's go back to that fixed notion of home we cling to, perhaps unwisely. Despite the swirl of change that churns around us, everything can appear to be perfectly normal. A-okay. We'll get by. After all, we always have before. I say we embrace a new notion. Let's not assume that everything is A-okay. We don't have to be fatalistic about it. But let's all be more aware of what's going on around here. Let's ask more questions and then reflect deeply on the answers we hear. Let's just start there and see what happens. It's such a simple idea, but all the best solutions are just that simple. Do it with me. Take a deep breath. Slowly blink. And look at our home with fresh new eyes.